This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to have a really good show. As you know, I'm a veteran. I served in the Marine Corps, and I've always wanted to make sure that veteran issues stay in the forefront of what's going on as we're winding down from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We don't want to let the service that veterans have given to our country. We don't want to let that fall on the wayside. And so I've got some great members of the VFW and great people from the VFW in studio with me today. The VFW is the Veterans for Foreign Wars. They're one of the oldest, and I would say they're the oldest, biggest association that's out there that's serving veterans and veterans, you know, who have served in different conflicts overseas. They're out there helping those. Let me tell you who I have in the studio. I've got Joe Davis. He is the Director of Public Affairs out of the Washington office. I've got Ryan Gallucci. He's the Deputy Legislative Director out of the Washington office as well. And I've got Gerald T. Menard. He is a Deputy Director of National Veterans Service, and I'm just finding out today that he also spent some time in my hometown in Detroit, Michigan. So I've got some love for him on that one. But I got love for all of you guys, gentlemen. Welcome to Fed Access.
Good morning.
Thank you. You know, Veterans of Foreign Wars, VFW, you hear about it all the time. You hear about the name, and you hear about, you know, you guys are always, when you talk about veterans issues, always hear about you on the forefront. Joe, I mean, give me some history about VFW. I mean, you know, let people know what the organization has been about, your founding, you know, you guys got posts around the nation, a whole bunch. Talk to us about the background of VFW.
Well, thanks for the softball question there, Derek.
I'll toss you up right quick.
I absolutely love talking about sure. The organization. Veterans of Foreign Wars were founded in 1899. Our history goes back. It was the first time that America had sent large numbers of troops onto foreign soil. And that's the Spanish-American War and the Philippine Insurrection. Basically, when our founders came back, they came back to a government that had zero support programs for those folks who came back wounded, injured, or ill. That means if you came back an amputee or you have malaria or whatever, your family had to absorb the cost for your rehab or your prosthesis or whatever they had back then. That's just not right. So they started in the small grass movements and the grassroots movements to try to correct that. When our veterans came back from World War I, the exact same thing happened to them. And that's when we opened up our first office here in Washington, D.C. in 1919. And that's what we've been fighting for ever since. I mean, you know, the VFW, I mean, we're a name brand. We're sure. Across America. We've got 7,200 posts. But we're built on the principles of taking care of our veterans, taking care of our service members, and taking care of our families. And we do this through our veteran service organizations. I mean, working with our VSOs, we have claims, and Jerry's going to be talking about that. Claims assistance that last year helped 96,000 veterans to recoup like $2 billion in earned compensation and pension from the Department of Veterans Affairs. And we did it for free. And we did it as long as you're an honorably discharged veteran.
Right.
We did it for free. And you don't have to be a VFW member.
As long as you're a veteran.
As long as you're an honorably discharged veteran. That's what we do. On the legislative side, which Ryan's going to be talking about, is we have to compete in an environment here on Capitol Hill with 30,000 registered lobbyists who represent 20,000 individual clients who, other than lip service, don't really care about government programs or whatever, sure. The benefits that we provide to service members, veterans, and their families. Right. So it's a constant fight. You know, it's great to be on the side of the righteous.
Right.
You know, professionally, we can praise and we can slam in public whoever is with us or against us if we're taking care of right. veterans. And right now, when the wars end, you know, 2014, when it's coming down the road real fast, we have to make sure we don't go to the back of the bus again, because it happens after every major war.
Right. You know, you mentioned the VSOs and you're a veteran service organization. I mean, what does that mean? You know, a lot of people, you know, hear about the VFW and other organizations, but a veteran service organization, and I know you'll get into that a little bit more, Gerald, but what does that mean? What does that do?
Veteran Service Organization is pretty much, you know, we're chartered by Congress, congressionally chartered by Congress, to provide a service to veterans.
Okay.
So, you know, you're looking at the VFW, you look at the American Legion, Purple Heart, AMVETS, Marine Corps League, organizations such as that, that they actually have service officers out in pretty much every community around the
nation. Does that mean you get
nation.
Money from Congress or money from the government?
No. Okay. We pay for these service officers.
Okay.
But they're out there to help honorably discharged veterans to receive their earned compensation or benefits from the Department of Veterans Affairs, from their government.
Right.
For the most part, because, you know, you served in the Marine Corps. And when you went through your transition assistance program class before you exited, your mind wasn't thinking.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's like, I don't want to listen to anybody tell me anything more, because in a week or in a month, I'm a civilian again, and that's what I'm going to focus on.
Right.
Well, in the military, everybody tells you what to do and where to go immediately because you have a checklist.
Right.
Once you get out, there's no checklist anymore. And you know, that's what the benefit of joining a veterans organization is about, because we're going to cover you here on Capitol Hill. We got your back, and we're going to take care of you out wherever you are going to reside and relocate around the country, because we're all one team. You know, we all serve Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, even Coast Guard.
Right.
But the thing is, we can all speak the same language. You can all do the same head nod. And joining us gives us power in Congress. And that's the key right there. There's only 21 million veterans out there. There's only 2.4 million folks in uniform today. The country's population is 315 million.
Right.
We are a shrinking minority in the entire country.
Right.
What we have to do is make sure that our issues for veteran service members and their families still have a front seat in Congress. And that's what joining an organization does. It gives us that power to keep the door open.
I'm going to get to you guys in a few minutes. But, you know, VFW has, and you'll drive around a community and jump in on it anytime, both of you.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll drive around a community and you'll see a kind of a VFW post. You know, I always see that, and I always kind of wonder, you'll kind of see that they got different events going on and everything else. I mean, what's that about? I mean, is it a place for, you know, events and camaraderie, or is it also a place where you're providing these services at?
I'd call it fellowship to start with. I mean, we all think alike. You know, Jerry served in the Navy, Ryan served in the Army, I served in the Air Force.
Jerry, jump in, Ryan.
Well, there's a misconception out there. The idea that seems to have general parlance with the public about the VFW post, and I would guess some other service organizations as well, is there a bunch of old veterans sitting around a bar drinking and smoking and telling war stories.
War stories, yeah.
But more and more, if that ever existed in reality, it's becoming a thing of the past. There's a renovation, a revolution going on in VFW posts, and I think Joe can talk about it a little bit, where younger veterans are coming in. Some posts have daycare, for instance, free Wi-Fi. There are still places to gather. They still have family activities. They're still, especially in smaller towns, centers of their community, and very active in community activities. But they're evolving and trying to stay and are, I think, in many communities, very relevant to today's new veteran.
So really, a lot of new veterans and you can even talk about that. Are you seeing a good number of the new veterans kind of?
We have a higher percentage. Well, Ryan's a new veteran.
Well, sure. I'd like to talk about that just a little bit. Right. What we've seen is, as far as membership for the Veterans of Foreign Wars, is that we're actually bringing in younger members at a higher rate than we ever have for any prior conflict, which tells me that veterans are receiving the message, at least folks from my generation, the men and women that I served with in Iraq. What's very interesting about that is the VFW has continually evolved ever since we were founded after the Spanish-American War. So every generation comes back and really makes the organization their own. I had the pleasure of going to Orlando last weekend for the Student Veterans of America conference there. Their SVA is a fellow veterans organization that meets the needs of student veterans on campus. And what the VFW has done is we work very closely with this organization. We officially signed a memorandum of understanding so that our post can work very closely with SVA chapters on college campuses.
Okay.
What's very interesting about this is it was already happening on the grassroots level. Mm-hmm. We had one post down in Florida where one of our state leaders, Mark Alvarez, had reached out to the student veterans at Florida State University very early on and cultivated the relationship that they have not only within the community, but also with the Florida State campus to make sure that they're meeting the needs of the veterans on campus. And that helps both organizations to grow and foster success among my generation when we come back and use the kinds of education benefits that, incidentally, the VFW and other veterans groups fought for on Capitol Hill.
Right, right. You know, you touched on two things I want to touch on. One, the misconception of the post. I mean, because I think that, you know, I think that is a common misconception of the old veteran just sitting around. And I'm glad to hear that there is this evolution of that the VFW and the post need to evolve to provide maybe services for veterans who have that need, whether it be daycare or other things for somebody to go out and get a job or other things like that. That's one piece. And then also now the dynamic of student veterans and this new, from what I'm hearing, this may be a new organization, you know, because we do have this now grouping with, especially with the, you know, we had the GI Bill, the Montgomery GI Bill, but now we had the 9/11 bill that, and I'm assuming that a number of veterans are taking advantage of that now and going to school.
VA reports that nearly 1 million veterans will be enrolled in any of their education programs within the next year. Wow. Now, that includes post 9/11 GI Bill, Montgomery GI Bill, and their other programs for disabled veterans like vocational rehabilitation. What's interesting, and I really want to touch on Orlando because it just came back and it was an amazing conference and very, it motivated me
and
to get back
hold
out there.
That 1 second, because we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Orlando, and then I want to get into some of the benefit issues and everything else. And so hold that right there. Talking to VFW right here, Veterans of Foreign Wars. I've got three outstanding members. I'm going to talk about them and where they served in a few minutes. But I've got Ryan Gallucci, and he's going to be talking about Orlando in a few minutes. He's handling the legislative affairs. He's deputy legislative director at VFW. Joe Davis, he's director of public affairs. And Gerald Menard, he's deputy director of National Veteran Service at VFW. We'll be talking about veteran issues and how the VFW is handling them when we come back. You're listening to Derek T. Dorch on Fed Access on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're talking about veteran issues, and I'm going to be talking about this all year. So if you're going to listen to Fed Access, please know that I'm going to keep on top of veteran issues because I think it's important. Veterans have served. I served in the Marine Corps and a veteran, and I've been proud of that. But veterans have definitely served and made a lot of sacrifices for our country, and we need to also make sure we hear about the issues and keep that on top of our minds. I've got the Veteran of Foreign Wars. They're a membership organization that definitely serves the needs of veterans. Got 1.5 million almost, I should say, in here in terms of membership. And I've got three people in here. I've got Joe Davis. He's Director of Public Affairs. I've got Ryan Gallucci. He's Deputy Legislative Director. And I've got Jerry Menard. He is the Deputy Director of National Veterans Service. They're in the studio with me talking about veteran issues. Ryan, you were talking about Orlando. We were talking about student veterans. And you're saying that 1 million are going to be possibly, especially as they're coming out with the 9/11 bill, you know, they're going to be coming out and getting education.
Yes, absolutely. There are 1 million that VA expects to be enrolled in college this year. And actually, an additional million transitioning off of active duty within the next 3 years as we draw down in Iraq and Afghanistan. What was very interesting that I saw at this conference in Orlando was the effect that the VFW and the veterans community has on issues around the country. Now, we lean on our membership here at the Washington, D.C. office when we speak on Capitol Hill, when we testify before Congress, or when we speak to federal agencies. But to understand exactly how these issues come to the forefront, it happens on the grassroots level. We're a very democratically run organization. Our legislative agenda is driven by resolutions voted on each year by our members. And these resolutions come up through individual posts, departments, all the way up to the national level. And what I saw in Florida was really reinforced what we do on a day-to-day basis with student veterans coming up to us and saying, well, you know, I already am a member. I understand what this means to the policies that are being drafted in Washington. It spoke volumes about the voice that the veterans community has. As we saw the last Congress, it was called one of the least productive in the history of our country. But interestingly enough, many of the veterans initiatives that we wanted to spearhead, we were able to push through, whether it was the Vow to Hire Heroes Act, a comprehensive veterans employment bill, or the Education Transparency for Veterans Act, which is waiting the president's signature right now. What happened is we learned about a year ago that veterans weren't receiving the resources or information they needed to go to college. And I saw this myself when I was going to the University of Rhode Island as an undergrad. It took me more than a semester to navigate my GI Bill benefits and find out how to draw this money that I was entitled to from VA. And I wasn't alone. A lot of student veterans have run into this to the point that 58% of veterans responded to the 2010 National Survey of Veterans saying that they understood at least some of the benefits they're entitled to. We were told by many in Congress and even some in higher education circles that there's no way you're going to get a consumer protection bill for student veterans through this Congress. So what we did is we hit the halls of Congress. We worked with our partners in SVA and the American Legion, and we put forth one unified voice representing millions of veterans around the country, and we convinced Congress that it was the right thing to do.
You know, I want to talk about the dynamics, and because I want to get into the issues in a few minutes. With the National Veterans Service, Jerry, you're that unique animal in the room in which you have served on the military, then you went to the VA for quite some time and working in the benefits side of the VA, and then now came out and now have served in two veteran service organizations. Talk to us about the national service side of the VA, Veteran of Foreign Wars, and then also talk about how you guys are helping veterans get these benefits that they deserve.
The National Veterans Service of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, we're responsible for training our service officers who work in VA regional offices. Now, as Joe may have mentioned, we have over 1,200 service officers around the country who are accredited by the VA to represent veterans on behalf of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Accreditation simply means that the VA allows you to access veterans records or veterans record systems for veterans who have given us their power of attorney to help represent them. And when I talk about veterans, we're not just talking about veterans, we're also talking about survivors as well, because VA has a number of programs to help the survivors of veterans who have passed on. So these 1,200 service officers nationwide, most of them are our county veteran service officers or state employees, but the VFW has about 250 accredited service officers working in VA regional offices. The VA has got 58 regional offices around the country.
You're actually at a VA location.
We're at VA regional offices. Okay. To use the parlance from the last 10 years of war, we've been embedded with the VA that we're co-located with them. They provide us office space. We get their used or discarded furniture if we need it. They provide telephone service, telephone lines, and with our computers that we buy, we can hook into their systems and use their databases to get the information we need to help move claims along. Okay. Find out what the VA is doing at a particular point, what evidence is missing in a claim, for instance. It allows us to interact with them and the veteran, make sure that we're trying to get, bringing everything together so that the VA can make a decision.
Sure. You know, with that, and that's a unique kind of situation, and definitely a good cost-cutting measure for the VA, because your veteran service officers are hired by you, and they don't. So the VA doesn't have to employ additional people. But with all of that, being on all these different sides, I mean, everybody always says that, and even Ryan, you just touched upon it, about the delay in which benefits are getting out to veterans in terms of somebody filing a claim or somebody, saying, I need, whether it be a loan or whatever the case is. What is that going on? I mean, we've had this discussion for so many years, and everybody is kind of frustrated about this discussion. I mean, talk to us. I mean, what are you seeing from this side of it, and from being on both sides?
Well, first of all, it's not a new problem, and the origins of the backlogs that VA has in claims processing, the delays, we've testified before for committees on Capitol Hill about the problems that the VA faces currently, but also that there's a lot of blame to go around. It's not necessarily inept management by VA, not that alone. It's not a lot of new employees, which they've had over the last 5 or 6 years. It is also the fact that 10, 15 years ago and over the years, Congress, as they have done over the last few years, delayed appropriations so that it makes it very difficult for people, managers in the field with VA to hire people. If you've got a certain amount of turnover, you want to be able to fill positions as quickly as possible. If you've got to wait 6 months or a year to fill those positions, those are claims that are not being processed. Those are people that aren't being trained, claims not being processed. So there's lots of reasons why VA is where they're at now. The fact that in the late 80s, the Congress created a veterans court, which looked at, through individual cases, has looked at thousands of different regulations and policies that the VA has, and basically redefined everything, causing over the years, and after each case of significance, causing the VA to change their procedure, sometimes to review and re-decide tens of thousands of cases. All of this contributes to the backlog that they have. Hmm. Now, let me talk about the backlog for a minute. You can call it workload, you can call it backlog, you can call it inventory, you can call it anything you want, but it's a mess. The VA will tell you, and they talk in public to Congress and to the press, that their backlog is 900,000 cases, of which about 600,000 are over 125 days old. All they're talking about there are those claims that require a rating decision, the work of a trained rating specialist who can evaluate medical evidence and decide whether or not a disability is service-connected, and if it is, what the evaluation for it should be and what the effective date should be. It's a very important role that rating specialists do, but they're not the only ones making decisions. And there are a lot of other decisions that VA makes on benefit claims that don't require the decision-making authority of a rating specialist. So if you look at all the claims that they have, all the issues that they have to decide, and it's being decided by the same group of people that develop these disability claims in the regional offices. You look at everything, including death claims, burial claims, pension claims, education claims, and appeals. There are 2.1 million claims in the backlog, not 900,000.
Okay. Wow. I need to take a quick break right there, and that's a powerful thing to kind of take a break on. I want to talk about that a little bit more, because that leads us right into what are the top issues that we need to address, whether it be legislative side or benefit side. What are the top issues that we need to? Because to me, when I hear that number, it's ridiculous to me. In term, and even I hear 125 days for a claim to be processed. If you're a veteran just coming out of something, that's ridiculous. And for a person to have to wait even that amount of time to get some process rolling. So I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking to the people from the Veteran of Foreign Wars. They're a membership organization that focuses in on veterans and helps them out. A service organization who provides services to help them get their benefits and also represents them in Congress and talks about legislative issues and helps to get bills passed to represent veterans. We've got in here Joe Davis, he's Director of Public Affairs, Ryan Gallucci, Deputy Legislative Director, and Jerry Menard, Deputy Director of National Veterans Service. We'll talk to them a little bit more about these issues when we come back. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking to some good people from the Veteran of Foreign Wars. They're a membership organization focusing on veterans. They currently serve military members and honorably discharged veterans and retired members who've earned an overseas campaign medal, which that means they served overseas. And you don't have to necessarily be a combat veteran. You can, anybody who served overseas, right,
Chuck? That's right, Derek. If you have the campaign medal or if you received hostile fire pay, hazardous duty pay, I mean, you can join the VFW. Even those folks who've served in Korea after
the war,
are eligible for VFW membership. I'm a Somalia vet, and that was an Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal right there. It's basically you have gone into harm's way and you came back. VFW wants to recognize that with a membership. You have to earn membership.
You've got to earn a membership, exactly. You've got a number of different things that the VFW provides. I've got in studio Joe Davis, which you just heard. He's Director of Public Affairs. Ryan Gallucci, he's Deputy Legislative Director. And then Jerry Menard, he is the Deputy Director of National Veterans Service. Jerry, you gave some startling numbers as we close out the last segment about, 2 million, over 2 million plus the backlog of realistic numbers beyond the claims of that what the VA may say. That's starting to hear even the dynamics of 125 days or more. And we hear a number of stories. I hear it all the time about people who've waited a year or two to get some kind of, benefits and everything else. And again, it bothers me because the number of years we've been talking about this is like, well, why haven't we fixed this? I mean, what is the fix? Or maybe we can't saw that on FedEx today.
If I had that answer, I'd be getting awards right now.
Right.
The fix is there's no one fix. Sure. It's going to be a long, hard slog. There, as I mentioned, there are a great number of reasons why there's a backlog right now. One of it is the antiquated computer systems that the VA uses. In a world where you can go online to your local, you know, to your bank, to you know, any a business that that you've got an account at, and you can simply by signing in change your address, update your phone number, change the email address. You can do banking online. You can do all these things that with electronically with the new technology are not so new anymore. But you can't do that with VA. So anytime you want to change an address, you've got to write it out, put a stamp on it, snail mail it to the VA. And maybe 3 or 4 months later, they will have changed your address. Mm. The computer systems are antiquated. We were told recently that something as simple as changing an address. They wanted to be able to create one central location where there's one address for each veteran who's receiving benefits from the VA. And what they found when they looked at it was that address is being stored in 40 different locations. Jeez. So
and they're not all linked
and they're
up.
They're not connected.
Yeah, sure.
So it becomes a real problem. You want, if a VA employee has to change the address, you certainly want them to be able to enter it once and you're done. But right now the VA has to change it in if you're in voc rehab, you have to change it. There, if you're in education, you have to change it someplace else. And so
it becomes a problem.
It is a problem. It is a problem. So VA has undertaken in the last several years a major initiative with tens of millions, perhaps hundreds of millions of dollars invested to try and create, not to try, but to create innovative, state-of-the-art system where you've got one master record, if you will, mm-hmm. one location for all the data concerning individuals, and drawing from that so that several individuals at one time can access your record. If you have a change, you only have to change it in one spot. And they've also creating systems, in the process of creating systems that allow them to do some rules-based decision making, right, right. So that some things as simple as evaluating an eye problem that what do you have? You have got numbers with visual acuity. Plug in the numbers on visual acuity. It should be able to tell you whether that disability is 10% disabling or 100% disabling.
Right.
Some things just don't require a whole lot of judgment. So they're moving in that direction, but it's been a slow process.
It's a snail process.
It's been a very slow process. Through the 90s and through the first part of this century, the VA had a lot of fits and starts trying to get this going. It's only been with this latest administration, the Shinseki administration, and more recently with the Undersecretary for Benefits, Allison Hickey, that they've been able to really sort of kickstart it and accelerate the progress. Now, they've made a lot of strides, a lot of progress in trying to make to bring these systems online. Our concern about that is that it's not that they're doing it; it's well overdue. It's that they may be trying to put these things in place too quickly.
Mm.
When I worked for the VA, I saw a number of computer programs that were installed and rolled out to the field. Here, use it now, and you couldn't use them. They mm-hmm. weren't properly beta tested,
mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, there were with several of these programs, there were tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of man hours of productivity that was lost while people struggled in the field to try and use systems that we're not.
And then that adds to what we talk about in terms of veterans getting benefits because people are spent and they're spinning their wheels trying to get trained. Yeah.
So they've the VA's rolling this new program out gradually. They're in 18 of the 58 regional offices right now. They've found as they added the last of the several offices in December, five offices, they found that it overloaded the system. They didn't have enough servers. They didn't have enough the right equipment. So they're fixing these things, but they still want to have it all done by the latest I heard was March or May, and I'm still fearful that they're moving too quickly. There's a lot of pieces of this puzzle, and it really, if you're going to keep the people in the field productive, you can't give them software and systems that are not ready for prime time.
Sure. You know, legislative side, you know, because this is kind of the dynamics of operational side and working towards a solution. On the legislative side, is there anything that we can do, you know, in terms of saying, Congress, can you fix this thing?
Well, interestingly enough, this really, the problem of the claims backlog really has a snowball effect on the veterans community. The inability to process a claim properly can delay much-needed compensation. It can also hinder your ability to get a job with the federal government. Veterans of the current conflict and past conflicts have been entitled to the 5 and 10-point preferences in federal hiring. 10-point preference is predicated on having a disability rating that's been processed by VA. If you don't have that rating, your resume will not go to the front of the line.
Sure.
And when you talk about disability compensation, what that is supposed to do is supposed to make up for loss in earnings potential. So if you're injured in the line of duty, wounded in the line of duty, and can't earn a steady income the way you could have before.
Right.
That's what that's supposed to do. So all of this can compound and actually lend to the homelessness issue that we see among veterans. And
debt, homelessness, taking out credit, people losing homes, all kind of stuff.
Everything like that. And it snowballs into mental health issues. And even the suicide pandemic that we've heard among Iraq and Afghanistan era veterans. What we can do to alleviate this on the back end is first of all, raise awareness of a lot of the programs that are out there. During the break, Joe was mentioning to me, you know, got to get out there and talk about the 5 years of free health care that veterans are entitled to. That was a legislative initiative that the VFW pushed for while I was still in Iraq.
Right, hold that real quick. We got to take a real quick break. I'm going to come back. We got the last segment. When you go 5 years of free health. Is it 5 years of free health care?
Yes.
Okay, I want to go right into that when we come back off the break and then talk about, I want to finish us up because time goes so fast, you know. I want to finish us up talking about the issues and where you guys are headed in terms of priorities of going into 2013 and everything else. Got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep on talking to the great people from VFW, Ryan Gallucci, Joe Davis, and Jerry Menar. We're talking about veteran issues. We'll be right back on Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been talking about veteran issues, and we have been talking about them with the VFW, the Veteran of Foreign Wars, an organization that's very, very active out there representing members of the military who have served overseas in different conflict zones or have an overseas campaign medal. Great organization who's really on the forefront of helping veterans get benefits, but also representing the legislative issues that veterans have to deal with as well. Ryan, you were talking about the dynamics of this health benefit that veterans have. Keep on talking about it.
What happened is back when I was still in Iraq, as a matter of fact, the veterans community pushed for free healthcare access for veterans, specifically of Iraq and Afghanistan, once they came home, to offer some kind of stopgap measure to ensure that they received the care that they had earned through their service. So what we've done is we encourage Iraq and Afghanistan veterans who need that stopgap measure to go to their veterans healthcare facility, to their VA medical center, apply, bring their DD-214 from their service in Iraq, and take advantage of it and navigate the claims process for however long that may take. When we talk about legislative priorities on Capitol Hill moving forward for the 113th Congress, I really like to put these into three baskets. First is protecting the earned benefits that our service members, veterans, and retirees have fought for and earned on the battlefield. And what I mean is a lot of what you hear about cutting retirement benefits, increasing TRICARE, which is healthcare, and pharmaceutical fees for retirees, and also cutting back on ancillary programs that service members take advantage of, whether it's the tuition assistance program to earn a degree while you're in uniform, sure. or even just the commissary and the commissary and exchange program, which many veterans who live on post rely on. What we saw last year was a number, well, we outlined 10 specific points that Congress was looking to scale back for service members. And it happened to coincide.
They're still on the table.
They're still on the table. This happened to coincide with the 10th anniversary of the war in Afghanistan, so we called it the 10 for 10 plan.
But, you know, the crazy thing is everybody, you hear Congress is always, they're celebrating a veteran, but then it seems as in the kind of the shadows, I mean, it seems like legislative is going through to kind of cut the services of
this happens every time a major war ends. Mm. At least in the past, they waited after the war before they started cutting the military and cutting back on all the programs and benefits that take care of those veterans and those and their families who basically also serve.
Right.
It's tough out there. You know, the nation's financial situation right now, it's not going to stop. You know, sequestration, we don't know yet if it's over or not, but that's really just a one-time event.
Right.
We're worried about future fiscal year budgets coming out of DOD and coming out of the VA, because the VA is ultimately a service organization.
Right.
They operate, I mean, they're the largest integrated healthcare system in the entire nation, and they are fantastic on the medical side.
Right.
On the benefit side, as Jerry was talking about, the VA, VBA, the Veterans Benefits Administration, the VBA is the key to all things VA. If you can get your claim in the door, then you can get your medical care.
Right.
And as Ryan talking about the five years here, hopefully that Iraq-Afghanistan veteran is going to be filing a claim while he's getting that 5 years.
Right.
And Joe touched on an interesting point that it was really our second basket of legislative priorities, and that's ensuring proper access to care and benefits. And that means whether a veteran can enroll for that 5 years of free healthcare, but also that their claim is being processed in a timely manner. And not just the disability claims, but education claims as well. What we saw is that there's still student veterans out there who hadn't been paid for the first semester. So the fall semester of 2012, their claims for education compensation lagged until the end of December. And we've heard that some still haven't been paid as of this morning.
Sure.
In addition to that, the third is ensure a reasonable transition or a quality transition off of active duty and into the workforce. What we want to see, and even the president has outlined this, is a military that's career ready. We want to make sure that when a service member takes the uniform off, that they can transition into a quality career or into an education program that's going to help them fulfill their career goals down the road.
Right. Go, Joe.
We talked earlier about why people should join the VFW or the other organizations. Right. This is why. I did 24 years in the Air Force. I had no clue that any of the veterans organizations did this on Capitol Hill.
Right.
I thought my SGLI, my life insurance increases came from the good graciousness of Congress and the Pentagon.
Right, right.
I thought my health care came from that. I thought my pay raises came from that. Absolutely wrong. Right. We have to fight for this tooth and nail almost every single day in the halls of Congress. We have to tell DOD, who's basically in penny pinching mode now because of the budget, that you need to protect the current retirement system because we don't want the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs to be the last person standing. We want the best qualified and a command sergeant major of the Marine Corps. We want the best qualified, not the last man, because nobody from day one, when they raise their right hand to come in, knows that they're going to stay 4 years, much less 40 years.
Right, right.
So we have to protect what we have right now and try along the way to enhance it and to create more programs. We absolutely understand fiscal realities. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if you ask a nation to go to war, very few of the nation actually goes to war. You have an inherent responsibility to take care of them and their families when they come back.
I totally agree.
There was something I wanted to touch on with that. When the wars come to an end, when the conflicts draw down, it's very easy for the public to forget about the men and women that they sent into battle. And we're already seeing this. And I even hear it from colleagues of mine who I served in Iraq with, who just got back from Afghanistan, that they're concerned about public perception and public support waning. And it's very interesting. A lot of companies say they support the troops. They support our uniformed military personnel. But when that uniform comes off, it's
no
not
longer
as easy.
Yeah.
I draw back on one of my first jobs in D.C. working on a Department of Defense program on troop support. Companies would say, hey, you know, we really want to support the troops. Can you find us some amputees? Can you find us somebody with TBI? Can you find us some people to wear the uniform?
They want to take some pictures and they want to...
We really balked at some of these requests saying, no, that's absurd.
Right.
We're going to make these available to service members and veterans, and whoever takes advantage of it is who takes advantage of it. We're not going to roll out some charade
That you helped a couple people and then you got some pictures with the CEO
It's obviously it's stuck with me over the years, but and that's really what we want to prevent. We want to make sure that Americans recognize that just because you're not wearing the uniform doesn't mean that you didn't serve. It doesn't mean that you didn't sacrifice for your country, and it doesn't mean that you're not entitled to these benefits that Congress has outlined for us and that the veterans community has fought so hard.
And I find it to be ridiculous that, you know, in the military, you get out as a, you know, I know we talked about this as a prime example. Mm-hmm. You get out as a medic and then you're not prepared automatically to become an EMT in the private sector. You're not in the natural
registry. We are definitely working that. But it's a state licensing issue.
Okay.
So basically, you know, what we have to do, first of all, is have the medical folks, because all the military medics and corpsmen, they're all trained in the same location now down in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, they need to start training to civilian licensing standards.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And that way it helps ease that. Now, for all the states, we need to have the states be able to basically grant them like a temporary probationary period where they can go out and work.
Right.
And earn a living while they're filing for their own state licensing. You know, the same thing for the lawyers when they get out of the military, and especially for the spouses and their transportability of their careers. But we're looking at all this, and these are the veterans organizations on Capitol Hill that are making sure, going to push this through. We're going to make it happen.
This is the reason why you need to join the VFW, one of the reasons, out of many reasons. And I wish that we could keep on talking about this. Our time is, it goes too quick. And what I want to say is that, you know, you guys will definitely be back, because, I mean, we've got a lot more to discuss. 2013 has just got started, and I want to hear about, you know, where issues are on the table, what progress is being made, or what challenges that, you know, obstacles that we're running into, artificial barriers that are being put up that are stopping things from pushing forward. Let's put it out there and let the public hear it so that they know what's going on and what needs to be addressed. Thank you, guys. Ryan Gallucci, Joe Davis, Jerry Menard, thank you for serving. Thank you for coming on Fed Access, and thank you for all you're doing for veterans.
Thank you, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.